Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down with someone in the literary world. My guest today is author, troublemaker, and good friend, John Cherry. John, welcome to the program.
Hello, Simon. Good to talk with you again, and look forward to talking with you about this new book.
John has just published his second Beatles-inspired book, Paul McCartney's Solo Career, 1970 to 2010, Life, Love, and a Sense of Childlike Wonder. John, where on earth did you get the title from?
Well, the first part's was pretty easy, of course. The life, love, and a sense of childhood wonder, childlike wonder, are kind of a combination of what I feel like at Paul's career, solo career, and some of his Beatles, well, sort of maybe focuses on the most. Life, certainly, with probably in the last 10 years, he's written more about, I think, his own life in his songs. You know, he did write about he and Linda a lot when she was alive, but I think that's probably where that came. Certainly love songs he can write as well as anybody in the world, and you know, some of my favorite songs about love probably are written by Paul, so that's where that one would come from. The sense of childlike wonder is actually a line from his last album, a song called Sing the Changes, and I, along with other people that have heard that song, seem to really focus on that line of feeling a sense of childlike wonder, kind of a Paul's song. The song is very uplifting, and that's sort of that line that sort of focuses the whole song, so I kind of wanted to throw that in because I think it also sort of states at this point where Paul is in his career that he, even though he's been doing this as long as he has, he still has that type of feeling, that childlike wonder of what's going on in the world.
Before we get too deep into the book, I know that some of our listeners are going, who the hell is John Cherry? Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I have worked in college athletics for almost 30 years at the University of Oklahoma first and then the University of North Carolina. So that was really my focus of my career. And then I retired 5 years ago because I got one of the state pensions that actually I think hopefully will be available to people in the future, but I'm beginning to wonder about. So that gave me the opportunity to retire. And usually towards the end of my career, I started writing a little bit just about different subjects. That's a different book, kind of a more wide-ranging book, not about Paul McCartney, even though it does have a couple of chapters about music and the Beatles to some degree. So I started just sort of writing then, not really thinking about it as a career. And after retirement, I decided that I would finish that book after all those years of writing. And since it was more current events, I had to really sort of sit down and finish it and take all the research that I had and decided to do that. Got that published in 2008. It's entitled War on Us. Us is really U.S., United States, standing for United States, How Policies and People Are Destroying America. And maybe appropriately talking, at least mentioning this after the day of our election. But it's kind of a wide-ranging. It's not just about politics in general. It really covers lots of different things. So that sort of got me into writing mode. And I was driving down to the North Carolina beach on the interstate with a lot of time on my hands and started thinking about Paul's music and how nobody recently written about his career and how well he was doing, the type of music he was putting out. So that inspired the second book titled Better Than Lennon, The Music and Talent of Paul McCartney. And after that book, I said, well, I've written sort of in broad strokes about Paul's music, comparing it somewhat to John, but more just making the statement that Paul had superior talent, not really trying to pick on John Lennon fans by any means, but just sort of, he just saw John's name was the first one that sort of came to mind when I was developing the title, and I sort of go with my instincts on that. And after I did that, I thought, well, I had a couple of people commented about they would have liked to know a little bit more about the songs, and I considered that in the book, but I thought I really would have gotten too long and sort of lost the focus of what I was trying to write about. So I said, well, now that I haven't done that yet, then I'll attempt that, and really had a lot of fun with it. I sort of ended up, I have a large library of books about the Beatles and McCartney, so I had the resources right here in addition to using the internet. And it was easy to sort of just sit down with a couple of books, four or five probably mainly, and write about the songs. And I learned a lot, just I'm sure one probably don't remember it all, but just about how some of the songs were developed, what Paul was going through at the time he wrote them, what he was writing about, how the response was, who he was playing with. I think, you know, we've discussed that in the past, of the number of different artists that he has played with and his band, and just as guest artists on all of his albums is tremendous. And so I just sort of started putting that together and just had a lot of fun learning a little bit, and also getting it out in kind of a condensed 40-year career look at what he had done. People have done portions of his career, but I haven't seen anybody maybe that's gone into quite this detail for his whole solo music career.
Now, I also understand that you are the owner or co-owner or something of a bar and restaurant deal.
I am. I moved to Southwest Florida, a little town called Nokomis, Florida. It's just south of Sarasota, and that's why I started, a group of us started looking to make an investment on the coast down here, and we I had a friend that lived down here, and we found out that this restaurant here that's on the water called Pop Sunset Grill, right on the Intercoastal Waterway, was possibly available for sale. So a group of us got together and ended up buying the location, probably not the best time in late 2001, but it's worked out well. It's a great location, being on the water, and it's continued to do well. I pretty much try to, while I'm there, not on a terribly regular basis, but enough. I do let the people that do such a great job down there run the restaurant try not to interfere too much. So that's the fun part of my life.
All right. Here's the important question. So there's free beers when I come to visit, and my wife likes Southern Comfort.
We can handle both of those easily. We have three bars, actually. If you want to bar hop, you can do that and never leave the property.
I'm joking with you.
Well, we'd love to. We'd love to have you here.
In 2009, you published Better Than Lennon. This was a book that, even though I have to admit, I'm no great Beatles fan, but I can spot a good food fight when I see one. You know, in the book, you dared to compare and contrast John Lennon and Paul McCartney. excluding from the moment that I helpfully added a huge amount of gasoline to that fire, what sort of feedback did you get from the book?
I thought for the most part, there were a couple of people that suggested that the world would be a much better place if John was still here and I wasn't. But, you know, I don't know if I expected anything quite that rash. But, you know, I love the passion that people have for John. Again, I think the title is misleading. You know, I really rather have people read the book, and then if they really feel that way about it, then – you know, certainly I hope they'll express their opinion, but it was really just expressing that I thought that Paul's talent is superior, and the only person I could really felt like that was worthy, that was also maybe related to him in some way as far as the time period, or in actually this case in his own group, was John. So now granted, as you know, I do blame Yoko Ono for some of John's problems and her creating her own problems for the group themselves. In fact, the Beatles anthology was a big production, and I actually got to see sort of a rough cut of it, and in it, George Harrison says, Yoko was creating a wedge between John and the rest of the group. So to me, that was the clearest evidence. You have one of the Beatles actually saying something that open about it. I wish that had kind of stayed in the final cut, but I'm sure Yoko probably vetoed that. But so I wasn't really trying to attack John as much as I just thought, okay, let's look at all the success that Paul's had, and his success as a Beatle with the songs that he was mostly responsible for was greater than John's, and I think I made that case statistically pretty well. And then also musically, where Paul played so many different instruments, even in the Beatles, where he played drums occasionally when Ringo either wasn't there or Paul decided that Ringo just wasn't giving him exactly what he wanted, or played lead guitar, like on the song Taxman, for example, Ticket to Ride. Paul ended up playing lead guitar. So I just really feel like maybe if you look at all the different instruments, and of course he's known as probably one of the best bass musicians in the world. You looked at all that and took that all as a capsule in what Paul is all about. I just thought that the statement should be made, and I think he's been slighted in the past in the media. Rolling Stone being an example that John, John has kind of gotten better treatment, but maybe it was time for somebody to step up and say, well, I think this about Paul, and here's why.
I think you did a splendid job, and of course, I'm like you. I'm a consummate troublemaker. I had to admit that, I'd always viewed radio, as a fairly harmless media. The conversation we had, the panel discussion, we turned radio into a full contact sport.
We did, and I like that. I like the passion that somebody has, because obviously I feel like I have that for Paul and his music, even though, in his latest book, I think I really try to always be objective about anything that I'm writing about, but it is harder when you do have such admiration for an individual. But I hope that people will see that I was, while I had a lot of praise for Paul, that there were times when I thought maybe he wasn't coming close to matching his output to his talent. So I think maybe that people just hopefully will take an objective view about all these things and not just automatically think, well, this guy's blind to other things and doesn't open himself up to try to learn, because that's part of the case. The fact that I've got a library of Beatle material here that I feel like I have, become knowledgeable about the subject and well enough to be able to write something like this and be as objective as possible.
Okay, on to more recent events. What prompted you to pen Paul McCartney's solo music career?
I talk about it in the first part of the book. I hate to say this, but it's probably really true. One review about my first book stated that I just didn't provide enough detail about the songs. Well, when I started writing, I knew I could have probably done that, but that's not what I wanted to write about in Better Than Lennon. So when I read that review, I said, well, not to say that I'm thin-skinned, because there were a lot worse comments made after our panel, as I mentioned. But I thought, well,
got to admit, I know the best people.
Oh, well, they were great. I mean, I learned a lot, and I took my shots, but I think I also I counterpunched fairly well, backing up what I said and what I wrote. But I think after her review, that it was I just thought, well, okay, if she's not satisfied, then I'll give a little bit of what she wants, and so that's sort of what gave me the main push to do it. But I think more when I just sat down and started looking at some different things and reading through some old material, I thought, well, this really could be a terribly interesting book when you get into all the influences, players, reviews, you know, going all the way back to now 40 years that you read about and what people were thinking at the time, where they thought Paul was headed. You know, I mentioned some, there's a couple of times when, like an early, after Paul had broken up with, you know, broken up out of the Beatles and was dealing with all that, that's how much it affected him personally and emotionally and in his music. I think that was certainly one of his, probably his lowest period, and maybe in his adult life, except losing Linda, as far as dealing with everything that was going on around him. And, you know, it affected his music in a fairly negative way. And he even questioned himself. There's a quote from Linda in the book that Paul's to the point where either I'm going to get it done and to create the magic that I thought I used to have to some degree, or I'm getting out of music. And I never knew that it got to that close to the point of him not, you know, making any more music. But that was quoted in right before Paul made before they made the Band on the Run album. So those things, I think will probably be interesting to people, because I felt like if I didn't know them or didn't really have a deep knowledge about them, that other people would probably find it interesting as well. So when I got into it was a lot of fun, and it just kind of grew as it went on, and there was a lot of material out there if you just you know, look for it a little bit and try to condense it into a book where people will follow as it goes along, and also you know, be able to see what was happening at that time in the mid-70s when he, you know, kind of went back to the top and was doing, having success comparable to what the Beatles had. And anybody that he had a couple, he had another dip or two in his career after that as well, but he seems to have bounced back in the last 20 years, as far as I'm concerned, and been putting out, while not charting quite as strongly as in the mid-70s for lots of different reasons, as we talk about what radio presents to the public these days, at least mainstream radio. He certainly, I think, the quality of it from, you know, fortunately, you know, Blogger News Network does reviews, and they were one of the sources I used in my book, and just to see what other people are thinking, where you can get a good sense of objectivity about the quality of what music he's producing now.
I've got to admit, I did enjoy the book a great deal. I know people who are fans of a band or a musician, and they tend to be completely unobjective. You know, they have the blinkers on. Every song, every album is a wondrous thing, but you and I know that is not true. No. You're a fan, but there is no doubt in my mind that you love, you know, the music of Paul McCartney. But how do you maintain any level of objectivity?
I think it's just a part of my own character, I suppose, that of just that I have high expectations of people that I know have tremendous talent. So therefore, I think maybe before a release comes out, I'm expecting it to all just, you know, every song to be great. That's not, very rarely is that the case. Probably Band on the Run might be as close as Paul got to that, with the complete album, you know, being really full of, I don't want to say absolutely outstanding songs, but many, many, many good songs, at least. Most albums I know don't have that, and I think when he suffers maybe by more than one or two songs on an album greatly, I just really, it's a little bit of a letdown. You know, I can focus more on the really good songs, but I think I just keep, when you hold somebody to a high standard, you're also, maybe it is a little bit easier just to be critical in some ways, just because you know they haven't either. And when you look back into it, as I wrote about in the book, where he would just go into a studio and knock off a song, I just, you know, and that wasn't normally a formula that worked very well for him, and it didn't, particularly in the early years, where he would just, you know, almost ad-lib a song. And even in later years as well, to some degree, that, you know, he just didn't produce the quality that he did when he was, you know, maybe being a little more meticulous about creating the song. So I guess probably that I expect so much that it was not that difficult maybe to make those comments. Not pleasant and not fun, but, you know, sometimes I'm not listening to the songs wasn't all that great either. So maybe that's the reason.
Okay, you cover 40 years of Paul McCartney's music, his solo career, and this is where I add the gasoline. I mean, well, you know me. I mean, it's what I'm good at. If you had to pick the lowest point in his musical career, and I know the duck out answer might be Linda's death, but that wasn't necessarily a low point in his music. It was a no music period. I mean, the man needed some time to gather his thoughts. What do you view his low point as?
You're very, very correct about he did sort of basically take a year off after Linda passed away, and felt like that was what he really needed to do. And it's great that he felt like that he knew himself well enough to know that that's what he needed to do, because I think a lot of people probably don't handle that quite as well. It was good that I think he did that, and he started writing about it, which I think maybe was also later after that, so I think that was helpful to him. But the actual probably worst time frame as far as the output of Paul's music to me was really starting with his first album. You know, there were some highlights on the McCartney album, Maybe I'm Amazed, but there were a number of songs that were unfinished fragments and instrumentals, you know, that people just were not used to getting from Paul. And this was after, when you compare it, this was also after Abbey Road. So, you know, when you contrast those two, the creativity that existed in Abbey Road with all his different songs there versus what came out with McCartney, I think it just stunned some people that he could produce an album that was probably, I don't want to say half of it was probably throwaways. In fact, Paul even calls some of those songs throwaways to some degree. So I think that, and probably he bounced back a little bit with Ram after that, but then also in the next year with the album Wildlife, I think it also was probably had two of his worst songs of his career, period, in it. And had some other ones that were better, but still overall, as far as the top quality and the overall quality, I think two of those first three albums were his worst musical production. And I think, and I lay that out in the book, as I'm sure that people will probably, a lot of people, Beatle fans will know, that it was just a terrible time for him in so many different ways, of having ended up suing his own group. He had to go through that, and then still having to deal with all the music, the financial issues that he was, and trying to get rid of the manager that the other Beatles had hired, Alan Klein. It was just difficult problem for him to be able to put the focus and effective input into his music at the time. So I think that has to be taken in perspective as well.
Okay, well, what I would like to do is play a little musical interlude, shall we say. It's a cover, and it's done by Jock Bartley of Firefall fame. And I want to talk a little bit about the song.
I look at all the lonely people, Eleanor Rigby picks up the rice in a church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing a face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong? I look at all the lonely people. I look at all the lonely people. Father McKinsey, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear. No one comes near. Look at him working, darning his socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong? In the church and was buried along with her name. Nobody came, Father McKenzie, wiping the dirt from his hands as he walked from the grave. No one was saved, all the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong?
Okay, simple question. How do you, or what do you think of that as a cover?
Different approach, obviously not as much on the orchestration, but I think maybe more focusing on the acoustic part. Probably actually presented that song in the form that it was before George Martin and Paul arranged the orchestration that came with it to some degree, or very close anyway. So I think that sort of gives you kind of a very neat look, almost like an outtake without the orchestration of that song. So I thought that was well done.
Okay. I asked you what the low point was in Paul McCartney's career. What do you view as the high point, the absolute apex?
I think he actually may have had a couple, but I think probably Band on the Run in 1973 would have to be considered part of it. You know, probably part of that rise of him going back really to the top of the music world in the mid-70s, really from 73 to, say, 78. You know, started with the album Red Rose Speedway, you know, highlighted by the song My Love, but Band on the Run, I think, probably had him the most accolades, where you'll read about reviewers in the book that talk about it being, you know, by far the best thing any of the Beatles had done at that point, and probably George and John had put out some of their best music as solo artists by that time. So I would probably say Band on the Run, but that was kind of a time frame that he went several years with. I don't think anything quite matched up. Venus and Mars was close. He sort of, you know, maybe started distributing songs among the group a little bit more, which I think maybe hurt the quality as he went into Wings at the Speed of Sound in 76. And then he started a little bit more downhill when Wings actually ended up breaking up around 1979 and 80. So I like that time frame. As far as my own favorite, my own favorite song is My Brave Face from 1989, when he was working with Elvis Costello. So I still think that's a great combination for him. I think people will be interested to read in there of, one, that they got along great, but maybe that sometimes that Elvis pushed Paul a little bit more than Paul was ready for or decided that he wanted to do, or maybe even felt that, oh gosh, this is going to appear that I've had to bring in somebody that a lot of people compare to John Lennon with the way he writes and sings and the lyrics that he writes, that maybe he was trying to save Paul's career. But I think Paul ended up doing some of the songs a little bit more his own way, and I think that Flowers in the Dirt album from 1989 was a terrific performance. So I guess musically, as far as you can look back charting-wise and successful-wise, you got to go with 73 probably to 78 period. I still think he put out a tremendous amount of music, and even his last album as The Fireman and Electric Arguments, certainly, and the last two albums before that with Memory Almost Full and Chaos to Creation in the Backyard, are certainly comparable quality-wise in my mind of other things that he's done in the past.
It was interesting that you bring up Elvis Costello. He actually is a much misunderstood musician. A couple of years ago, I was invited to review an album. It was right after June Carter Cash had died, and it was a tribute by many musicians, and Elvis actually did Burning Ring of Fire.
Yeah.
If you haven't heard it, you should.
I think he has a tremendous talent. I agree with you that he's probably not received the credit that he is due for all his talents. I mean, he musically and certainly lyrically, lyrically, I think he's just as good as anybody you can find. And I think it was a great match for Paul. And I hope someday maybe they'll get back together and write. And there's some other people out there it'd be interesting too for Paul to write with. But he seems to be okay on his own and produces fine on his own as well. But just for variety's sake, and I think Paul always kind of keeps an open door. I don't think he gets in any sort of real formula of how he creates and ends up making a song what it is any particular way. So I hope maybe, and I know that obviously they still have a great relationship, and I hope maybe that they would get back together, because honestly, I really think they put out a lot of good music, not just that came out as Paul's Paul's music, but also on Elvis's releases as well.
Okay, my mission in life is just to cause you grief. I have to ask the question, did Paul McCartney break up the Beatles?
Well, he is the one that released on his album, and probably not in the most effective way, in my opinion, and I think other people might agree. He did announce that the Beatles were breaking up or he was leaving the group. John had initially, several months earlier, had indicated that he was going to leave, but he did not do anything, except he did put out some individual releases, but he was still recording with the group. So the announcement, yes, was by Paul. As far as the factors that broke up the group, I do not think you can lay much blame on Paul. I think it was the hiring of the Beatles manager, Alan Klein, for one, that and he ended up being convicted of fraud, so Paul ended up being right, I think, and that it was a mistake to hire him. Phil Spector coming in to complete the Let It Be album, where he actually, the other three Beatles kind of gave him the leeway to change dramatically. For example, Long and Winding Road, when he added a ladies' choir to that song, and Paul lost control of his music, something that he had never had to fight like that for. And I think he just saw what was happening at the time, and that if he was not going to be able to control any of that on a comfortable basis for himself, that the only solution was to go out on his own. Now, that being said, I think after that, and even in 1973 with Band on the Run, at the time, right before Paul recorded that album, there was a lot of discussion about getting the group back together, and Paul even mentioned that we got in the legal part, there's no reason we can't, get back together again. John tried to get back with Paul in that time frame, 74 to 76, and again in 1980, actually, even while he was recording his last album. Some say Yoko blocked some of those calls. If that's the case, then I'm sorry that happened that way. But so I think Paul was the instigator as far as the public was concerned, because he made the announcement of it. However, I think if you look behind and look, and I talk about that again in the book, one, how that affected him, all the things that led him to actually finally make that decision. On the other hand, also, as time went on, that he was very open to getting the others together. And I think George, to be honest with you, after the fact, George might have been the biggest roadblock to getting the group back together, even more so than John was between the period of 1970 to 1980.
Okay, this might be the end of a great relationship, and the potential of free beers and southern comforts. you know, I'm not nearly as well versed in the Beatles, either as a band or as solo performers as you are. But there was a McCartney song, and it was accompanied by an absolutely wonderful video that went with it. Yet I don't recall it getting a mention, the infamous Mull of Kintyre.
I mentioned it in the sense that it was kind of unusual that he was writing about how much his love of the Scottish countryside. I did mention the fact that surprisingly it was the biggest hit for Paul, single. For Paul, even bigger than She Loves You, which I think really is amazing if you look back on it about how big that song was, that it was number one in England, but actually was not even the A-side released in America and didn't chart anywhere near as well, which was amazing. So the song didn't get a whole lot written about it, but I did mention the fact of what he was writing and who was and what he was writing about and how well it did and great success in England.
It was, you know, you couldn't turn the radio on, turn the TV on, you know, without seeing this video. I mean, it was a bang smash hit. Why didn't it chart in the U.S.?
Maybe the time frame I guess that was 1977, could have been a little bit to do with it. I think obviously people not knowing as much about the Scottish countryside that the song referred to was part of it as well, that it maybe they just didn't relate to it quite as well. It's strange because, again, that was a time frame when Paul was still doing well and should have gotten the recognition, but that's kind of always been a mystery to me to some degree, because I thought it was a different song for one, you know, using the bagpipes and everything, but it just didn't have the same appeal here as it did just dramatically over there. I mean, again, for a song like that, for any song to pass She Loves You, and actually I think it's as far as the original creation, it's still the number one selling song in England of all time, single. Amazing that much difference between the two coasts. I don't know if you'd see that today or not if something was released, but very dramatic and hard to totally figure out, I think.
I look at it and I listen to it. It wasn't lyrically challenging.
That's true.
Yeah, there's just something Moorish about it.
Yeah, no, I see that, and that could certainly be part of it as well. I mean, I don't rank it, you know, anywhere, you know, high on my list of his best songs. It's kind of a nice sing along every now and then, maybe. But when you take everything into account, I don't rank it terribly high on his overall list. I guess I get it as far as why success, because maybe it made the whole Scottish countryside, you know, become alive for the people who are listening to it over there, and so therefore that was part of the interest for him there. But I agree with you. And again, you know, that's one of those things that, you know, you have to be honest about it. That you know, when you compare it to his whole body of work, is it really high on the list? I probably would agree with you and say no.
Okay, let's do some Shameless. And I do mean shameless commercialization. Where can people buy your books?
I have my own website that I started really with last book, Better Than Lennon. So it's betterthanlennon.com. And if they go and order the book there, and it's available on, you know, a lot of the other normal sites that people know about, but if you buy it from that site, it's autographed, putting together a collectible bookmark. And also, I'm actually going to add I think a lot of artists and what's just been released, for example, for Paul's band On the Run, some bonuses, some different, some additional written material, some inside information that I chose either to take out or I actually accumulated after I'd finished the book that I will include in the mailing with the book to anyone who buys it on betterthanlinen.com.
Okay, I'm feeling slighted. Number one, I didn't get a signed copy, and I don't have the cutesy page marker.
Well, actually, the bookmark is still. I think it's on its way from North Carolina, where I had it developed, and the additional material is still in the final works. But anyone who does order the book by going to betterthanlinen.com, and additionally also has additional information. I include the Song of the Month by Paul, other information about Beatle-related news. So I think people will find it interesting if they go to the site for that reason. But Simon, you have my first book on the way, and you know I'm going to keep you updated and provided with the most update and completed material that I can put together, and also hope that you'll come up and have a drink or so.
Oh, you can bet your bottom dollar on that one. okay, once more, I'm going to go out on some very thin ice and some mixed metaphors. I travel a strange tightrope. I'm a reviewer. I'm not a critic. Years of English lit in an English grammar school all but killed my love of reading. Was it not possible that an author merely wanted to write a story or, you know, compose a song? They don't have to be a hidden agenda. In fact, I made a pact with myself when I decided to embark on this new, rather strange career that I would not do it. I will not analyze things 8 ways to Sunday. Is it fair for people to dissect the words of a song? Did the composer want people to do this? Hell, is it even valid? The Beatles and their offspring are great examples. I mean, I can't think of a song that hasn't been dissected. Why do it?
I think part of that probably comes because they're trying to better understand their own favorite artist and see if there is something that they're writing from. I think John Lennon probably wrote more so from his own, you know, personal heart. Paul seemed to be able to create characters and everything. But when Paul did write, I think the lyrics provide people, particularly I think, and that's why I included this in the title about life, love, and a sense of childlike wonder, that the lyrics do provide, in some cases, comfort, sometimes inspiration to people. So therefore, I think they're looking to that, to at least people who enjoy lyrics of the songs and not just listening for the music and not the lyrics, that they're looking to that. And therefore, when the artist maybe stumbles a bit, in their opinion, then I think maybe that's where the analysis comes from, that they're saying, okay, well, he's done this, he's provided this, he's talked about this, he's done these things with writing about these different subjects and things like that, and then all of a sudden he's either not or he's not doing to an effective job in their opinion, and so therefore they decide that they maybe should make comment about it. You know, and that's the good thing that I included about reviews in the book, that people would either concur with what I said about some of the comments about the lyrics. An author named John Blaney, who I used two of his books to really as sort of the core of writing both of these last two books, really got into the core of some of that, just people's response and reviews that came from that time, that you can really get into a look as to why people might think that. I think that's what they get from the lyrics. The people who are interested in them make analysis is that they have that much interest in what the songs are trying to say.
I'm not sure I'm buying into this.
Well, I think in Paul's last album, and also let's say when he was writing about what he was going through with losing Linda, and then also starting a new relationship, I think people can relate to that. I can personally. There's been some times when Paul wrote a song that was absolutely almost tied to me emotionally, what I felt like I was going through in life at the time. I don't know. I can't speak for other people as to the way they think these things, but I got to believe I'm not the only one. So therefore, I think maybe that you look into your artist, one of your favorite or some of your favorite artists for inspiration, guidance, comfort, all these different things. And when a song doesn't seem to provide much of any of that, then maybe it's easy to be critical about it.
Yeah, I guess.
I think I'm looking for, it's just sort of like your own personal, I assume it's your own personal psychiatrist or philosopher or whatever that puts it in better terms or opens your own mind to it, and therefore you don't really become totally attached to what he's saying, but you do find comfort, possibly direction, those types of things from it that I think maybe that's what people, to some degree, expect from Paul at times, not all the time. Certainly Mull of Kintyre doesn't really provide you any emotional direction, but...
Look, I just like the video.
Yeah. Well, he's done some nice videos. So My Brave Faith was a very interesting video, too. Kind of combined the Beatles and his solo career. But, I think people like the lyrics. I think... You mentioned that when you played Eleanor Rigby, it made me think about, I remember some people's responses to it, and I think maybe some of this came on the anthology, prior to the anthology promoting it, that you'd find blues artists that would mention that asked them what's your favorite Beatles song, and it was Eleanor Rigby, because of emotionally what that story was told through that song, in addition to me, just the whole way the song was structured, but... I do think that people look to the lyrics for maybe some whole bunch of different involved a whole bunch of different emotions in their own lives, and I think that's where they probably get a little too attached and overanalyze as a result, which I think maybe is what some of what you're saying, which I can see.
I don't recall ever reading an interview with Paul where he critiques his own work, saying, "Oh yeah, that was crap."
I think there is some of that in the book. I think as he goes back and looks at some of, for example, the song that I meant, the album that I mentioned, the Wildlife album, with the songs Mumbo and Bip Bop that were just to me couldn't have spent more than a few minutes on creating them, considering what they ended up being. But, he looks back
on that. I think in the trade, that's what you class as a throwaway.
That's a throw. Well, yeah, at best. He says he cringes every time he hears that song. So, where that was available to me, and, again, I felt like I had pretty good resources on writing this book, I included that in this book. So, most times I think Paul is looking back, obviously, and not talking about it right after it comes out, even though he makes some comments about maybe what was influencing him to some degree at the time. But, in perspective, again, and there's been so many books written about Paul and the Beatles, obviously, that you can get into, you can find some of that information about how maybe he looks back, some of what he feels about some of these songs, which I thought was had to be included if it was available in the book, and so I did that as much as I could.
Okay, are we going to be having round three of John Cherry and the Beatles, or are you done with the subject?
For the moment, I'm probably done. I still collect material, so I wouldn't ever say that I wouldn't write something else. Just after I wrote the first book, I wasn't really thinking about the second one, and then I got, that one response to it, and I thought, okay, well, Let me give you what you want. You know, try to appeal to your interested public, or in that case, disgusted public, possibly. But so I'll leave it open from that standpoint. I am, as I mentioned about my first book that I've ever written, I am sort of collected a tremendous amount of material for it, and which I think you'll be getting a copy of that here in the next day or two. So. I probably will work towards that, but I'm not going to rule out anything. I think that's the fun of writing. You have to have inspiration, I think, and passion to really do a book. I think it requires dedication to the task, particularly the editing process, which will really wear you out, I think. But unless you want to totally put that in somebody else's hands, which I was not my choice, but. I do think you have to almost say, okay, for the next however many period, how much time it's you think it might take you, you have to really sit down. I don't care, what your status is as far as your working career or retirement or whatever, that you have to sit down and be dedicated to doing it if you want to put out any sort of quality product.
Oh, I agree. And you've got to love what you're doing. If you don't love what you're doing, you're not going to end up with a quality product.
No, I think that is the approach that I take too. And I think I try to sort of do a little go outside myself to some degree. And you learn that when you're doing your self editing. But that to go back through the book, and if you still like it, a couple of months after you've really finished it, and you read it back through it, and you still seem to like what's there, sales seems fresh and informative, then you're probably getting close to where you want to be with what you want to put out to the public.
I mean, what's not to love about Paul McCartney's solo career, 1970 to 2010? I saw an early galley, an email version. And a few days back, the real thing arrived, and I looked on the back cover, and hey, anyone that quotes me, I mean, oh, it's got to be a great book.
Well, I would have to agree totally, certainly with your insight into it, and really, to me, surprisingly, with not being, a self-professed, not huge fan of the Beatles, but certainly knowledgeable, that your insight after working, that's the one thing, I guess, after you write a book, too, you want people to kind of have insight into what you've done, because therefore your message has been reasonably effective, and or they're just really smart. I'll give you credit for both. that you communicate something, and hopefully that people will feel that way about it. Interesting also in the foreword, that Bill Harry, who I know probably a lot of Beatle fans know, that was the founder of Mercy Beat magazine, which sort of is given at least some credit to sort of helping with the popularity of the Beatles when they were winners of a poll and they were on the cover of that magazine. But he was a longtime friend with them. He writes the foreword about the book, and I think in a nice way kind of says it's nice just to have something about the music and not really get into so much personal stuff that people want to. Because there's some books out there recently, one called Fab and some other things about Paul, and there's about John, and that really are get in personal stuff that I don't know how much knowledge that they have, the writers have, about some of this stuff, and I'm not really sure that we need to hear most of it anyway.
Yeah, you're right about the concept. I received a galley for a new JFK book. One written by someone that was on the security detail, Secret Service. And I put up a story saying, coming soon, blah, blah, blah. I haven't read it yet, but, it looks really good. And, boy, the hate mail I got.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, they don't even need to read the book. This is bullshit.
Oh. Well, I kind of thought that you were going to say the opposite, because, if you read polls about what people think happened, on November 22nd, 1963, there's not a, it doesn't seem to me to be a consensus of belief of that, you know, there was a lone gunman, some degree, I guess, but because that's all the information that's really ever been put out there for with supposed proof, that I think there still seems to me to be interest in that. So I'm a little surprised if you're getting all that that type of negative reaction. On the other hand, I was kind of surprised by some of the negative comments I got about Better Than Lenin to some degree, only at the extent that I thought that if people read the book that they would probably not feel as strongly maybe as they indicated in their comments.
Right. I mean, obviously, Better Than Lenin is far different from, an ex-Secret Service guy writing his memoirs. But, you know, it's similar insofar as people just go, oh, no, that's not the way I have understood the story.
Well, in that case for his, there's, there is still a lot more speculation, and if you, different stories that you read and books that you've read over time about it, that there still seems to be a lot of unanswered questions about it. I even commented, actually, you'll be surprised, I actually commented about that, about the assassination in my first book that I sent you, in the sense of when I was talked about Lyndon Johnson and the fact that 3 days before that President Kennedy was assassinated, that he had met with Terry Sanford at the time from North Carolina, governor of North Carolina at the time, that about replacing Johnson on the ticket. So I always thought that the timing was kind of unusual, that it was in Texas, which was Lyndon Johnson's home state, and the fact that something like that happened when there was apparently the possibility that he was going to be dumped from the ticket.
Right. Okay, we seem to have got completely off topic.
Yeah, the boss will probably just create it, phrase some more negative mail for you to get into the JFK stuff. But anyway,
oh,
that
I
is mentioned.
That
is part of my first book, in case people are interested in my first book, too.
Oh, and you can rest assured that I will be reading it when it arrives. And
so many different subjects in it. I think you're really it's going to be interesting to see the response that I get from you, because it does just delve into 20 chapters, and there's everything's pretty much different from chapter to chapter. There's somewhat of a theme in it, I think, if you're paying attention to it. But a lot of it's just kind of my own little fun of saying, well, I'll throw this in just for fun.
Well, I have a theory. I love to read a good rant. Are we talking rants?
I think that's probably my sister actually said that it reminded her of Dennis Miller and one of his rants in that book. So I would say there's a decent possibility. Certainly more so than than my intention was in Better Than Lenin, which I didn't really think was a rant, but. Yeah, there's a bit of that in there for sure. With some tongue in cheek and little jokes and things like that I hope people will catch if they choose to read that book as well.
I can't wait.
Yeah,
okay.
It's not all Beatles, Simon. I mean, at least there's gonna probably be some subjects that you feel closer to and probably even more knowledgeable about, so that hopefully will provide you some entertainment of some sort.
Okay, we're about out of time. My automated nag is saying 60 seconds. John, I really want to thank you for taking time out to talk with me today. And I know I speak for everyone at Blogger News in wishing you every success.
Well, thank you. It's totally my pleasure, too, Simon. Love to talk with you about anything, anytime. So, talking about this subject in my book, it's a real pleasure for me as well. And thank you very much for having me on.
Let's talk again soon, possibly next Sunday.
That sounds great to me. I hope everybody will be paying attention to the possibility of that show being on as well.
Oh, it'll be bad.
I'd be disappointed if it wasn't.
Okay. John, till next time, goodbye.
Thank you, Simon. Appreciate it again.
Okay, bye.
Back to you later. Bye-bye.